Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Asad Dean, MD, about the treatment selection for patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia in the second-line setting. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Dean discussed the roles of covalent BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitors in the management of CLL. He highlighted the importance of molecular profiling for treatment rechallenge decisions and the potential for resistance mutations in this disease. He also noted the role of pirtobrutinib in overcoming treatment resistance, along with clinical signs indicating that patients may need a therapy change. Dr. Dean also mentioned the high response rates seen with CAR T-cell therapy in patients with CLL and explained the possibility for combination regimens in this disease. Additionally, he expressed optimism about BTK degraders and bispecific antibodies.
Within the chronic lymphocytic leukemia space, how do you approach treatment selection in the second line for a patient with relapsed refractory disease? And, you know, what are some of the current unmet needs in that second line setting?
We have revolutionized therapy for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. When I was a fellow a quarter of a century ago, I can't believe it saying that, but at that time, it was fixed duration chemoimmunotherapy. As of the advent of brutin tyrosine kinase inhibition, it has revolutionized, as I stated, the way we approach treatment. So in practice for me, the majority of my patients in the frontline setting are receiving a covalent brutin tyrosine kinase inhibitor. There are some patients who are hesitant to be on continuous therapy, and for those patients in the frontline setting, I have done time-limited or fixed-duration dosing anti-BCL2 therapy along with anti-CD20 therapy. Now, they have both proven to be effective regimes in the frontline setting. However, as is the case in other malignancies, resistance can develop. So in the second line setting, as I said, majority I use a covalent brutin tyrosine kinase inhibitor. If it is due to progression of disease, then I will change to a BCL2 therapy in the second line. However, with that being said, NCCN guidelines recommend consideration following a covalent brutin tyrosine kinase inhibitor of either a BCL2 inhibitor or a non-covalent reversible brutin tyrosine kinase inhibitor. So that is what NCCN has recommended and how I will shape my approach in the second line setting.
When making that treatment decision in the second line, is there a role for rechallenge with a covalent BTK inhibitor or a BCL2 inhibitor in that setting? When could that approach potentially be feasible?
Yes. If a patient is intolerant to one brutin tyrosine kinase inhibitor that is a covalent BTK inhibitor, then rechallenge can certainly be possible and not losing efficacy or response. I would also say what is important is the molecular profiling. So it is very important to know if they have a deletion 17P, a deletion 11Q, a TP53 mutation, if they have unmutated or mutated immunoglobulin heavy chain status, and that could also influence consideration of a rechallenge. The problem with rechallenge upon progression is development of resistance mutations. And those mutations for the BTK inhibitors most commonly happen in the C481 binding region of the brutin tyrosine kinase enzyme. But you can also have BCL2 mutations, and perhaps the most common is glycine 101 valine that is seen. So you have to be careful about rechallenge because the binding of the particular enzyme, if it is mutated, it's unlikely going to respond to a treatment within the same class or same way of binding.
When rechallenge might be a feasible option, you know, how do you weigh that versus potentially moving to a new therapy if there is an approved and indicated option there?
Yeah, for me, the rechallenge makes most sense if they're intolerant, because it's unlikely that you have been able to exhaust the lifespan of a particular treatment. And so therefore, the mechanistic approach to me would still continue to work.
And moving to pirtobrutinib, obviously you mentioned it's currently indicated for patients. So, you know, after a covalent BTK inhibitor and after a BCL2 inhibitor, and like you mentioned, the NCCN guidelines also, you know, have it in their recommendations. So, you know, what could signal that a patient might be ready to move on to pirtobrutinib, and, you know, what clinical signs are you looking for? And, you know, same with safety and, you know, that aspect of things.
Sure. I think the beauty of the advent of pirtobrutinib is having non-covalent reversible binding, and therefore that allows you to overcome resistance. Now, clinically, if a patient is progressing, they could have worsening blood counts, worsening cytopenias, anemia, thrombocytopenia. Their white count could be escalating. It is important to note that you do get a transient lymphocytosis following initiation of a bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor due to a compensatory lymphocytosis due to discombobulation and egress into the peripheral blood. But that subsides in time. But if you're seeing after months or years on a bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor and the white count is starting to elevate, then that could be that you're losing response. Also, if they're developing progressive or worsening lymphadenopathy, I would also say it would be important to biopsy to make sure that they're not transforming to a higher grade lymphoma. And if they are getting progressive splenomegaly or they're having recrudescence of B symptoms, fevers, night sweats, weight loss, worsening fatigue, those would all be indicators that you are losing response or developing resistance, indicating a need to change therapy.
Could you potentially see pirtobrutinib playing a bigger role in the second-line setting and addressing some of the gaps that we've talked about here today?
Yes, in my opinion, I do see it playing a bigger role. If we are to be dogmatic, the pirtobrutinib indication is following prior BTK covalent BTK inhibitor as well as prior BCL2. But the way it is designated in NCCN guidelines is following a covalent bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor, you can then have the option of going. So I like that flexibility because we currently don't have an indication for upfront combination bruton tyrosine kinase inhibition and BCL2 together in a frontline setting. It is recognized by NCCN, but we do not have an FDA approval in the United States. And so therefore, based on NCCN as a platform and a foundation, I do find it advantageous to be able to move to a non-covalent reversible bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor like pirtobrutinib following progression on a covalent BTK inhibitor.
Well, liso-cel was also approved in that third line and beyond setting in CLL. So where does CAR T-cell therapy fit alongside pirtobrutinib as it's currently being used? And if you have a patient who might be eligible for both, what are the factors that impact that decision?
Yes. CAR T-cell therapy is a remarkable way to harness an individual's immune system to combat their cancer. And within CLL, it's following heavily pretreated patients. It is important to note that the response rate can range anywhere from the 40th to 90th percentile, and the complete response anywhere from 18 to 68%. Also, studies have shown that if you are able to obtain a complete response in the first year, your progression-free survival and is much better at 5 years if you can demonstrate a complete response in the first year. And there's also been data to suggest that you can have improved response combining it with a bruton tyrosine kinase inhibitor such as ibrutinib. So the data is forthcoming, and I think we will need to see in time where does CAR T therapy fit, because it is an expensive therapy, although advantage is that your treatment is done in a fixed time frame, and if you can achieve that type of response, then it's unlikely to develop the resistance that we see with chronic continued usage of BTK and BCL2 inhibitors. You can also develop resistance to pirtobrutinib as well. So I think that the promise of CAR-T is taking that out of the equation, but it is still far from being moved into an earlier setting.
What other areas of research or novel agents could also help improve treatment options within that second line setting in CLL?
Yes, I'm particularly excited about research that is looking at brutin tyrosine kinase degraders, and that is through ubiquitination, essentially proteasome, destruction. And so I think that is exciting class that is under investigation at the present. Also, there has been promising phase one data looking at bispecific therapy, specifically epcoritamab. The EPCOR trial, which included heavily pretreated and also high-risk CLL patients with a primary endpoint of overall response, demonstrated a 61% response. So I do think the excitement of bispecific therapy and tempered toxicity related to immune effector cell associated neurotoxicity syndrome is a issue that clinicians have to contend with. So as we become more comfortable with bispecific therapies and other diseases, then I think it will help us when the time comes for where that could fit into the equation for chronic lymphocytic leukemia.
With September being Blood Cancer Awareness Month, just based on everything we've talked about here today, what would kind of be your main message for colleagues about the current state of things within the second line CLL setting and where things could be going with additional research?
Yes, it's an exciting time for patients, and it's an exciting time for research development taking place in chronic lymphocytic leukemia. As you know, this is a disease that tends to affect older patients with a median age of 70. So ultimately, the goal is to provide safe, effective treatment that doesn't hinder quality of life or that creates undue risk that would outweigh benefit, since we're treating an older population. That being said, there are also younger patients who may develop it. And so more intensified aggressive approaches are necessary in order to ensure greater longevity and improvement in overall survival. I do feel optimistic with how the science continues to develop. And as a practicing oncologist in the community, I am so gratified by how I have seen in my own career the approach to CLL change. And to have oral targeted agents available is tremendous. It helps patients be able to take control of their lives, empower them to take charge of their health, and provides a convenient way to have effective treatment that is not only tolerable, but as I said, safe. So the future is incredibly promising, and some of the therapies which I mentioned, I look forward to seeing how that weighs into our considerations for our patients to improve their lives. There are a cadre of patients that have high risk and poor prognostic disease. Since 2014, we have made important strides with regards to brutin tyrosine kinase inhibition in contending with it. However, it's in and of itself not curative. So I think it's important for those patients who have deletion 17p, 11q, TP53 mutations, those patients who have had Richter's transformation to a higher grade lymphoma where pirtobrutinib has also been looked at and studied showing encouraging results, that we keep those particular patients in mind as areas where we have to continue to have better ways to approach them because their lifespan can certainly be curtailed by the biology of their particular disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.